Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us here on the show, sports columnist, legendary sports columnist for the Boston Globe, joins us regularly here on the DA Show, our friend Dan Shaughnessy. Dan, good morning.
Hey, DA, how you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks, as always, for joining us. What do you expect, or what does the Boston at large expect from the report that Rob Manfred's going to give on the Red Sox cheating?
Well, I don't think the Sox in 18 were doing anything to the level of what we've seen in Houston in 17 and beyond. But I don't think they were doing nothing. And I think early on, after the probe was announced, there was a kind of a drumbeat around Boston that this wasn't going to be anything. You know, J.D. Martinez came out and said, we were doing nothing, bring it on. Red Sox ownership was like, you know, we ask that everyone reserve judgment. We wish we could talk about it now, but we can't. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, bring it on, Rafael Devers, Jackie Bradley. But I've sensed that tone's changed a little bit. I've been in camp for a week down here, and, you know, Moreland was a little more reserved. Chris Sale was a little more reserved. And the owners the other day were a little more reserved when they were, you know, brought in front of the firing squad to talk about the Betts deal. But I think that I think it'd be very hard for the commissioner to broom this thing all together, which I think was the initial goal. And I think, DA, that the second team to get investigated after the Astros is unlikely to show nothing. I just think every team was doing something at that point. You got the Sox, who got caught with the Apple Watches in 18. They bring in Alex Cora. Excuse me, they got caught with the Apple Watches in 17. They bring in Alex Cora from Houston to be their manager in 18. It's just beyond belief that there was nothing going on. And I think they're kind of unlucky in that sense, that the next team that gets investigated will have to get some punishments, and I think they will.
So if you think that everybody in baseball was doing something like this, why do you think that there's such vitriol from players towards the Astros?
Well, I think the trash can thing, you know, the culture there, you know, the whole the Lednow thing, the Crane thing, the Taubman thing, you know, the code breaker stuff that's come out, and then the subsequent lying. It looks, I mean, I haven't seen every word, but it looks like Correa tried to tell us that there was nothing going on in the postseason in 17, and the commissioner last night said there was. I don't know. It's just, you know, the Astros are, no one feels sorry for them, but almost anything they say, they're going to get crushed for, and that is happening. But I've never seen this kind of player-on-player crime, you know, throughout the game where guys are just openly, you know, I mean, Markakis said they should get a beat down.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Sale wasn't very subtle, you know, in his discussion of what I would call frontier justice the other day, how the game polices itself, and you're going to see a lot of stuff happen. I mean, that doesn't bode well if you're Alex Bregman.
Yeah, no doubt. Dan Shaughnessy joins us from the Boston Globe. How did it go over as the Red Sox owners tried to put a brave face on trading Mookie Betts?
It didn't make any fans feel better in my minor polling. I mean, just people are really angry. And, you know, if you're a fan who just takes everything the organization says, then you buy into, oh, they couldn't sign him anyway. They had to get something while they could. But they've not even done that. They've positioned this as a trade about baseball, a trade about value. And that's a tough sell. They, you know, what they won't say is, we are Tampa Bay, you know, and that's what they've become, and that's the goal here, you know. And I still think they'll throw a lot of money at it, more money than Tampa Bay, but right now it's about, you know, you can't keep Brock Holt because you can't pay $3 million for that job. You can't pay Sandy Leone $2 million for that job, you know. They're not going to, and, you know, you take Ed Rodriguez to salary arbitration after he wins 19 and you beat him out of $500,000. You know, that's the new Red Sox, you know, 1,000 faceless guys in the clubhouse. And it's sort of morphing over to that, just trying to make deals and do it for less. And, you know, they got under the luxury tax, but they're still insisting that it wasn't a salary dump and that it's not about the CBT. And that insults the intelligence of their fans.
Well, why, if we dig a little deeper, are they doing this? They are willing to pay premium price to own Liverpool and to run away with the English Premier League. They have paid plenty of dollars in the past to spend and win in Boston with the Red Sox. Why suddenly are they looking at price tags?
Right. I mean, they've had the highest payroll last year. They did not make the playoffs with the highest payroll in baseball. They've consistently been way up there. But I think that it's time. Their view is it's time for a reset. And there's a little bit of inability to cast blame on themselves. And some of the timeline it doesn't figure out is, you know, Henry told us in September, we've known for a year we had to reset. Well, if you knew for a year, why did you allow Dombrowski to sign Eovaldi and Sale for 68 and 200 million, respectively, 68 and 145, I guess. Why did you sign those contracts in the wake of knowing you had to reset in order to keep bets or in order to keep the thing going here? So they like to blame Dombrowski, but they also they did it themselves, and they got themselves into this. And I think they don't want to go where the bets thing is going. I understand that. He's liable to be – he could end up being Andrew McCutchen. You can make that case. He's mildly overrated. But you can't tell people he wasn't going to stay here anyway unless you play him next year and then you match – you compete for his services, you match any offer, and he's not going to stay here anyway. That's the only way to establish that that's true. And I just believe they didn't want to go where it's going.
Dan Shaughnessy joins us from the Boston Globe. The waiting game is on for Tom Brady's decision. As the days go by, do you get more and more sense that he's not coming back, or do you get more sense that he is coming back?
I waver every day, and I try not to think about it because I'm so tired of it. At this point, you know, I write columns there, and it's more interesting if he goes at this point. I mean, I've kind of come around to, hey, this has been great. I wish he had retired after they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I'd like to see the team try to win without him. I'd like to see Belichick try to win without him. I'd like to see him go to another place. As just a sports fan, I just want to see what'll happen. And I think they can beat the Bozos in the AFC East with any quarterback. You know, I mean, it's not like they're going to get a challenge from the Dolphins or the Jets. So they can still compete. And their defense is a little old, as you know, and they are sort of built to win now. And I'm not sure a 43-year-old quarterback is a necessity to that. I'd love to see each side do without the other and see how it goes.
Let's say that they moved on and he signed somewhere else. Who do you think would be the solution in Belichick's mind for 2020 at quarterback for the Patriots?
Well, he's thought of it and we haven't. So that's, you know, I mean, whether Stidham is his guy, whether he goes out against Teddy Bridgewater, Andy Dalton, I mean, you know, we've kicked around all the usual suspects. And that's, you know, Bill took pride in identifying Jimmy Garoppolo and having this is really nobody's fault. Bill fixed, you know, he had the succession plan and Tom outlived it. And that's good for Tom, and it was good for the Patriots. More Super Bowls. But that's the charge for Bill to do that again now.
Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe, our guest this morning on the show. Celtics in the East, this is interesting. I mean, the Bucks have had a historic run to this point in time, but the Celtics have shown stretches of being absolutely red hot. How much better are they this year without Kyrie and with Kemba?
Well, it's funny. Most of last year they were better without Kyrie. When he was in and out of the lineup, but I guess we have to just sign on to that despite his enormous talent. It's a team that, you know, it's a little less talented. The ceiling's lower, but the production's probably going to be better. And I don't think they would be embarrassed in the playoffs again by Milwaukee if they played them again. There's a lot of duplication with the 6-7 wing men. There's three of them that are all really good. And there's, you know, they don't have enough big people down low. We know that. But within the conference, I mean, Philadelphia is such a dumpster fire right now. I mean, they have better players. They don't have a better coach, and they don't have a better bench, and they don't have a better game plan, whatever you want to call it. So I think in the East, I know Miami's surged and Toronto's there, and I just like Milwaukee and Boston to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. But that's what I like.
Do you think – I want to know why you think that Brad Stevens has worked in the NBA. In the wake of John Beilein resigning, yet another former college coach can't get it done at the NBA level. Why do you think that Brad Stevens has been the anomaly in that?
Well, I mean, some would say he hasn't. I mean, because, you know, they haven't gotten to the finals yet. They've gotten to the conference finals, and last year's team underachieved, and Brad will own that. I mean, obviously, he's very media friendly. He's very smart. it's hard not to think of Pete Buttigieg when you're talking to him. They're like the same guy. But he's, you know, his out-of-bounds plays are really fun. You know, when they have the timeout or whatever, right. It's fun to see what they come up with.
And yeah.
I just think that, you know, he's kind of on the spot now that, you know, there's expectations are higher. And I think if they don't get to the conference finals this year, there'll be some grumbling. But Ainge loves him. Fans love him. He's pretty much bulletproof here. I'd like to see him with a little bit more talent. But, yeah, we enjoy seeing him here. And, yeah, he's translated, in my view, very well. And there are nights, you know, when they're playing the Sixers, in my view, they have a huge edge on the bench.
Well, okay, so you sound like you kind of like him, but you sound like you're taking shots at him as well. So there's a part of you that doesn't believe that Brad Stevens is Wonder Boy.
Well, I just don't think to this point he's established himself as a great NBA coach. I mean, he hasn't won anything. And you know, a lot of guys haven't. But players seem to want to play for him. And it seems like, you know, the Irving thing, that's just proof that when you have big star egos, like, no one can handle that. He certainly couldn't.
Dan Shaughnessy joins us this morning here on the show. You can read him at the Boston Globe. Check it out online at the Boston Globe's website. Follow him on Twitter at Dan Shaughnessy, Dan_Shaughnessy. Dan, it is always great to catch up. Thanks so much for doing it.
Thanks, DA.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.